This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The pink slips just keep on coming. Today, 725 jobs cut at Liz Claiborne. Yesterday, 7,000 layoffs announced at Macy's. We've talked before about both getting and delivering the awful news, but what about the workers who stay on? Employees who escape layoffs will certainly deal with pangs of survivor's guilt, but they also may be angry about having to pick up extra work, about the sour atmosphere at work, about the way managers did the dirty deed, and they might worry so much about possible new cuts they begin to envy the recently departed. Later in the hour, U.S. claims that Al-Qaeda may be close to defeat in Pakistan, and your emails. But first, a look at post-layoff syndrome. If you're a survivor or a manager, call and tell us what happened in your shop and what happened afterwards. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email talk at npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Joining us now from a studio at Time Magazine in New York is staff writer Barbara Kiviat, who wrote about surviving layoffs on time.com. And nice to have you on the program today.
It's nice to be here. Thanks so much.
And I guess we have to begin by pointing out that you're a layoff survivor yourself.
I am. I feel like I should stand up and say my name's Barbara. I've survived a layoff. We lost a fair number of people back in December, which was the genesis for writing this story, just what I observed in my own workplace, and then talking to friends and sources, especially in the business community, realizing that there are a lot of people out there going through anguish, and they still have a job.
One of the things you write about is, in fact, the way people tend to treat those who have been tapped on the shoulder and taken into the HR manager's office.
Exactly. When people lose their jobs, and I spoke for the story and others to folks who have been in that position, oftentimes coworkers who the day before would have been popping by to say hello, maybe going out to lunch, or suddenly, averting, eye contact in the hallway. It really is a bad atmosphere. And in reporting the story for time.com, one of the things that I found out is, part of this human reaction sort of pulling away from people who have lost their jobs comes from these feelings of survivor's guilt, survivor's envy, what psychologists call emotional contagion, which is sort of picking up on some of those feelings of desperation of the people who've lost their jobs.
Not only that, but you report that in companies where there have been layoffs, well, it's meant to make the place meaner and leaner if you wanted to put a positive spin on it. Nevertheless, productivity goes down and turnover goes up.
That's absolutely true. One of the management professors who I spoke to for this story, who's actually a social psychologist by training, Joel Brockner at Columbia University, has measured reduced commitment, diminished productivity in the workplace. He'll go back 6-8 months later, and a lot of times these feelings are still there, especially when management maybe doesn't handle layoffs super gracefully, when people are brusquely escorted to the door and not a lot of communication.
Well, there's probably no good way to do it, but there are better ways than others.
I would hope so. And that's, some of these management professors I speak to, I ask, why oftentimes don't companies, handle things, a little more tactfully. And of course, everyone's afraid of getting sued by someone on the way out their door, company secrets being stolen. Welcome to America.
Yeah.
But it's unfortunate because there are real ramifications, not just for employees, but employers as well. You mentioned higher turnover. There was a study that came out of the University of Wisconsin that found that companies that had big layoffs saw natural turnover, people just deciding to leave an annual basis at about 13%, compared to closer to 10% for companies without layoffs. So it's really only in a company's best interest to try to make this as smooth a process as possible.
We're talking with Barbara Kiviat of Time Magazine, the author of the recent Time.com article, After Layoffs, There's Survivor's Guilt. Well, what happened if you survived a layoff? We'd like to hear from those who were workers and those who were managers, too. 800-989-8255. Email us talk at npr.org. And let's bring another voice into the conversation. This is Mitchell Lee Marks, who's at member station KQED in San Francisco, the author of Charging Back Up the Hill, Workplace Recovery After Mergers, Acquisitions, and Downsizings. Nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here, not under these circumstances, but it is nice to be here.
Let's talk about this there's so many situations where layoffs rarely come as a surprise. The place is just rife with rumor before this.
Well, yeah, and first of all, don't discount the power of denial. There's a lot of feelings, well, you know, I've survived this far, maybe our company will be immune. But rumors run rampant. People have an insatiable appetite for information, and if leadership isn't coming forward with information, then the void will be filled with a rumor mill. And, of course, that's inevitably going to be more negative than reality.
And we were just talking with Barbara about some of the ways, you know, managers do have concerns about being sued, about company secrets being stolen, that sort of thing. Nevertheless, can you give us a couple of examples of how things were done, worse than they might have or fairly well?
Oh, there's unfortunately a lot more stories about how not to downsize than how to downsize. One is a company, a financial services firm, that did little pieces, bit-by-bit downsizings, which is really bad because every day people look around who's going to be next. What they did is they had their IT department turn off access to the systems of anyone who was going to be downsized later that day. And then eventually someone from HR would walk them down out the door. And then after a few days of this, people in the workforce understood what was going on. At the end of the first week of doing this, there was a system failure, and everyone's terminals went black. And there was a lot of angst, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
I think the what gets in the way, the problem, in my research, I've been studying this for about 25 years, there's really three problems that get in the way of doing it well. One is a self-imposed sense of urgency among leaders. They figure, let's do it quickly. Let's not linger. This is morbid. Let's not talk about it. The problem is people can't react to loss quickly. The second problem is the fear of violence. Whenever there's an occasional someone coming back to a workplace with a rifle, that creates obviously a lot of concern. But the fact is, of all the millions of people who have been laid off because of downsizings, very, very few have ever come back with violent reactions. And the third problem is that there's still a stigma of failure. Downsizing implies you did something wrong, which is not necessarily the case. It just could be a reaction to things well beyond your control. But the companies that are doing this well, at the top of the hour in your newscast, for example, they mentioned how PNC is going to try and rely on an attrition to the extent possible. I think that's great. If ideally we could turn the clock back a few years and let companies be more careful about their hiring and things like that. But going forward, communicate. Is very important. I think also just leveling with people. What you don't want to do, and what I see over and over again in too many organizations, is a macho attitude for the survivors, saying, you know, if you're worried about keeping your job, maybe you should be, or just keep your nose to the grindstone. I was in a high-tech firm just last week, and I was proposing to the executive team that we do some workshops with the surviving employees so they could vent and just talk about what they're going through. And one of the senior executives said to me, no, I don't want to do that because it's going to create stress. If we talk about the downsizing, it's going to create stress. And I turned to him and said, excuse me, but the stress is there already. You're not going to create it by talking about it.
And if you've been to the cafeteria, you know they're talking about it. And the other thing, one of the things, Barbara Kvyat, you mentioned in your piece, is in fact that people worry that, places downside. It's a moment when a company needs its boldest, most creative people to step forward and do interesting things. Yet then, of course, people are afraid to stick their necks out.
That's exactly right. Wayne Cassio was a management professor at the University of Colorado Denver, who I spoke to, who studied this. Is that this is the exact moment if you're working, with a smaller workforce? There are obviously forces in your industry, buffeting the company around that you need to react to. More than ever, you need to be innovative. You need to think creatively. But everyone, after a layoff, is very inward looking. They're afraid they might be next. They're, as you say, just sort of, focusing on their own work. No one wants to stick their neck out too far and be innovative in that environment, which is the exact thing that a corporation would need at that point.
Neil, if I may, there's really two issues that get in the way of creativity. And first of all, you're spot on. This is exactly when the company needs needs creativity. Downsizing has been referred to as corporate anorexia. You get leaner, but you don't get healthier. And this is a time when companies need creativity. As she said, part of the problem is you don't want to stick your neck out. No one knows. I don't know how you learn to do what your job, but I learned to do my job by making mistakes. You fail sometimes. And no one wants to be a failure right now in case the next list is going to be drawn up. The second problem is no one has time to innovate or be creative. You got six people doing the work that 10 used to do. Who has time to stop and think about how to do work better? That's the big problem.
A lot of mistakes. There was one. I think it was a Tuesday. Anyway, let's see if we get Greg on the line. Greg with us from Grand Rapids. Greg, you there? Greg has
been downsized.
Apparently left us. Let's see if we can go instead to, this is Erica. Erica with us from Phoenix.
Yes, I was just telling the screener, I'm a survivor of a nationwide occupational health care provider who laid off 2,000 people right before Thanksgiving.
Great timing.
Yeah, it was really hard at Thanksgiving dinner, just, you know, being grateful for having your job and thinking of those next to you who didn't. But what's hard now is with the economy this new year, the company proposed pay cuts for everyone. Benefits were cut back. And, you know, although that's understandable, like your guest said, it's hard to be healthy when we're getting cut so thin with our paid time off and everything else that we need as individuals to keep us sane.
Just quickly, would you rather, Erica, you know, everybody cut back a little bit, take pay cuts, fewer benefits, or a few people lose their jobs?
Well, I definitely would rather the pay cuts and such, but in my situation, I've been waiting for a promotion for a year, which I don't see coming, and as a matter of fact, my office might be closed down and relocated to Colorado. And I'm in a position myself, and I'm not trying to be a whiner here, but I'm pregnant. I've got a lot on my plate, personal life-wise, and to add that stress is just not helping at all.
Erica, good luck to you. Thanks for the phone call. We're talking about survivors of layoffs. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and we got this email from Dale in Tempe, Arizona. When I was laid off from my previous job due to the economy, I was very hurt. I was angry at my direct supervisor for what I thought was a lack of loyalty. As stupid as it sounds, I was angry she didn't walk out with me. I was angry she didn't stick up for me or take a pay cut to try to keep me on board. Listening to this segment today has made me think about her feelings and what she was going through. It's really good to hear the flip side. I'm glad you've showcased this problem of the layoffs, which most people do not consider. Well, that's exactly what we're talking about today. Those who survive, those who have to give out the news. What happens when the people have been pink-slipped, leave and leave problems behind? Well, not of their making, but there are problems there, plenty of them behind, including survivor guilt. Our guests are Barbara Kiviat, who's a staff writer at Time Magazine, and Mitchell Lee Marks, on the faculty of the College of Business at San Francisco State University, author of Charging Back Up the Hill, Workplace Recovery After Mergers, Acquisitions, and Downsizing. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Let's go to David. David with us from Odessa, Texas.
Oh, hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead, please.
I just wanted to comment on, people losing their jobs and the stress that they feel for the survivors. My industry, the oil field industry, has lost a lot of people here recently because of the decline in the price of oil. And, I have buddies and everybody that have been out of work for 2 or 3 months. And it's pretty stressful for the people who have kept their jobs.
And you feel like you're looking over your shoulder all the time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everyone here has taken a pay cut, and all of our competitors have actually cut jobs. And I'm just kind of waiting for that to happen. I'm the new guy here. I've only been here since August. And
last hired, first fired. Yeah.
I feel like it's coming, but, there's nothing I can do.
Well, sometimes the guy who's most recently hired is the cheapest, so somebody else goes first because you're down at the bottom of the pay scale, too.
That's true. That may happen. That may be the case.
Is it when people start losing their jobs, you know, because people are so worried about that, you're in a business. You're out in the oil fields themselves, or you work in the office?
I'm a salesman. I'm a field sales guy.
Okay. Has it helped productivity at all? I mean, morale can't be good.
You know, that is true. It has. All the people who, I guess, you know, missed, you know, 2 or 3 days a month, you know, well, those people are basically gone. And all you're left with is, I guess, a real quality employee.
All right. And, David, good luck. Appreciate it.
Love their job. All right. Thank
all right,
you.
Take care. And Barbara, we need to let you go, I know. But I did want to ask you about that part of it, you know, what David was just talking about, the idea that, you know, well, the people who stay on, there's one part of it says, you know, hey, I'm part of they wanted to keep me. I'm part of the elite. On the other hand, oh, my gosh, you know, how can I possibly live with this?
Right, right. One thing that he said, which struck me, was this idea of working harder, which you do get. People are suddenly afraid of being next. But in reporting this story for Time.com, you know, one of the things that I came across a couple times is just because people are working harder and putting in more hours doesn't necessarily mean that they're getting more done because of the anxiety and the stress. It sounded like he was very happy to be talking about it, mm-hmm. which is the advice I would pass along from the folks I interviewed, which is this is a part of the economy that we're in right now, and you might feel awful to complain, to feel bad, because you have a job and the person that used to sit right next to you no longer does. But that doesn't mean that what you're feeling isn't valid. I mean, there's plenty of, you know, bad feeling and pain to go around in this economy. So, you know, talking to your coworkers and your family and whoever else, you know, you talk to in life about this, I think helps a lot. At the end of one of the interviews I did for the story with a layoff survivor, you know, she just sort of paused a moment and then said, I almost feel better. She said, that's amazing. I didn't know I had this much to say about this topic.
Yeah. And if you talk to psychologists, any kind of life stressful situation, they say go to a therapist, talk to your bartender, talk to anyone. But the problem is people do turn inward. A small but growing number of companies are having what's called venting meetings, where employees come together after the cuts and talk about what happened. And what I in my research, I found that even the people who don't speak up benefit from these because they leave the room saying, wow, other people are feeling the exact same way I am. And, you know, in the venting meetings, it's not just about just complaining and griping, because what I find if these sessions, when I facilitate them, they last about an hour. After about 45 minutes, people are talked out. So what's next? Then you talk about what are you going to do differently? How are you going to walk out of the room and either perceptually change your attitudes, or behaviorally, what are you going to change about work? Because something does have to change. You just can't go back to your job and do the same old thing. Unfortunately, there's many pressures at the workplace that just eliminate the opportunity to stop and think about how to do things differently.
Well, Barbara Kiviat, thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Barbara Kiviat, a writer, staff writer at Time Magazine, the author of a recent Time.com article, After Layoffs, There's Survivor Guilt. She joined us from a studio there at Time Magazine in New York. Let's go back to the phones. This is Latasha. Latasha with us from Little Rock.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. And I just want to say that I am a survivor. And the most stressful part of the whole process is being part of the process informally, might I add. We were asked by the department heads in our industry, which is construction. I'm a file clerk, so I don't have any direct association with the layoffs and who to choose to lay out, but we were questioned about some of the work ethics and attendance and attitudes of other employees who were chosen to be laid off. And part of that was we were told that, you know, based on some of our discussion, which was only a select few people in the office were asked these questions, you know, and it was hard to make the decision of what to say. You know, you know, you want to be honest, but you don't want to be responsible for someone else being laid off.
Yeah, you're not being paid enough money to do that.
No. And at the same time, you know, do you go ahead and just divulge the information based on, you know, the company being staying alive and you keeping a job? Or do you look at the fact that this person has a family to take care of? You know, he's the sole your provider for that family.
Yeah, Mitchell Lee Marks, that's an awful situation to put employees in.
I think it's shameful. I have never heard of that.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, is that a common practice in business to do that, you know, to make other employees involved in the process, even though they are not directly in the position to do that?
They're not supervisors, yeah.
I have never heard of that. But I can see conceptually that the notion is, look, if you have people involved in the decision, they're going to be more supportive of the decision. So I can see they're coming from a good place. But in your own situation, Latasha, to have to come back to work the next day and think that you had a role in letting these nice people go, I just think that adds to the stress.
Yeah, and it gives me a false sense of security. I mean, am I being looked at as far as being able to move up into a position where they see that I am doing the best job that I can do and I can handle this situation? Or is it, oh, let's see what kind of person she is and where she's coming from, you know, and where she stands. Is she for the company or is she for,
Yeah, here's what I would suggest for you. Don't guess. Don't try and think, what is leadership thinking? What do they want from me? Make an appointment with your supervisor. And if he or she is busy, do something creative. Take him out to breakfast. Do something that, you know, outside the work hours. But go right to them and ask them, what should I be doing right now? Should I be doing things differently? Should I be towing the line? You're going to go through so much anxiety wondering, what do they want from me? To the extent that you can, take control and go to your supervisor. Don't wait for he or she to come to you and ask them, what's the right thing for me to be doing now?
Hmm. Latasha, good luck.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. This is an email from Dennis. I've survived 14 downsizings. The company does the downsizings in a respectful way, offering good severance package and employment services. However, management has done poorly in two ways. One, managers themselves have not been downsized in the same proportion. Two, managers do not acknowledge the loss that surviving employees feel when their friends are terminated. It's not survivor guilt, as that's beyond our control, but a sense of loss that managers do not want to acknowledge. And Mitchell Lee Marks, I think there are plenty of examples of places that do plan the downsizing pretty carefully, but then don't deal with the aftermath.
Yes. First of all, your emailer is spot on. How the cuts are made and whether they're shared at the top influences the survivor's reaction. You know, it's one thing for a CEO to get out there and talk about tough times, but not cut his budget or his perks or his senior team or whatever. The other thing about acknowledging loss that the emailer said, this is the starting point for going forward and working with the survivors. You've got to talk about the human psychological side of the downsizing. You cannot come out here with the macho, when the going gets tough, the tough get going attitude. One of the things that I've seen in organizations post-downsizing is when very tough executives walk in front of the workforce and say, hey, these are tough times. It hurt me to make the cuts. That shocks employees. That stuns employees. They've never heard their tough senior executives acknowledge their own personal loss. And Neil, I've got to tell you, I've been in the boardroom when senior executives have planned the cuts. And with very few exceptions, this is tough for even the most senior and high-powered executives. It's one thing for them to lay someone off because that person did not do their job well. It's quite another thing to lay someone off for no fault of their own. And I've seen very senior people actually shed tears over the fact that they have to do something to a workforce that's not the fault of the workforce. So getting in front of people and just putting on the table that this is a difficult experience is part of it. And sometimes you do that face-to-face by a senior executive going in front of people. Some companies are doing workshops where they get large groups of people to talk about just the psychology of downsizing and recovery. And I've worked with a few firms that have done some really creative things. I worked with a telecom company that there was just so much anger, so much frustration. Not only were there cuts, but after the cuts, they merged two divisions that had been internally very competitive. And so the new coworkers literally hated each other. There's no better word. They hated each other. So what we did is we decided we had to do more than just talk intellectually with these people. We had to get at an emotional level. So what we did is we had just a basic workshop. Then in the middle of the workshop, I announced to this, there were about 40 managers there, and I said, go to your office and get a memento of your last few years of working here. Then we brought them all outside, and there was a coffin waiting. And then there was a funeral. There was a band playing a funeral march. And we asked the 40 managers one by one to walk up and put their memento. It was a coffee mug or some letterhead or an award they had, and they had to put it in the coffin. And then out of the blue, around the corner, came a 100-ton paver. And the band then lurched into On Wisconsin, you know, that really upbeat
sure.
fight song. And the group went from being morbid to just cheering and excited and watching the coffin getting smashed by the paver. And then we rushed them inside, put them in caps and gowns, and we had the most mundane graduation ceremony you could imagine. And the CEO came in and said, you're the leaders of the future. He gave them a gift of a share of company stock as a symbolic gesture. But the point is, we've got to bury the old, and we've got to graduate to the new. And in this particular, and this was a very conservative company, but this shocked people. What it really did, Neil, in addition to just in an emotional level, showing people they had to change, was saying, hey, leadership is changing. My gosh, our white shirt, button-down leadership for the first time ever is doing something crazy like having a coffin in the parking lot.
A jazz funeral,
and,
yeah.
And it you know, little things, little symbolic things like that, I find, gain a lot because it's showing yep. to the employees that everyone has to change.
Mitchell Lee Marks of the College of Business at San Francisco State University. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Nate. Nate with us from Kansas City.
Hi. I'm a survivor of several layoffs, and in the most recent round of layoffs, which was a year ago, my entire team was laid off, 11 people and my boss. And I want to agree with the sentiments of that email that really the issue for me was the loss. And it's hard. You work with somebody for 10 years, they really become your friend. Those are the folks that you would normally go to in that kind of situation when you're experiencing some kind of loss. But it's hard to be the one person kept there to do the work and go to somebody and say, gosh, I'm really struggling with the fact that you're being laid off. Obviously my problem was much smaller than theirs. I noticed too then that when it came to productivity, what I should have done, I agree with the comment there, I should have jumped on the bandwagon and started figuring out, you know, how can I do this job in a new way and start the new innovation. But instead, I seemed like I spent about half my time running around the company trying to see if there were jobs that I could find for my friends who were being laid off at the time.
And that's obviously a positive thing to do. But yeah, that feeling of, you know, I just don't know what to say. Were you able to say anything?
Sure. Oh yeah. And the communication is key. It's come up time and time again. You have to have those conversations. I found that I wasn't very comfortable talking about my loss to my friends because it was obviously nothing compared to what they were going through.
It seemed trivial, yeah.
Right, but it did. Having that group of friends, you know, having coworkers who were also friends really helped us all get through it together, I think.
Nate, and you're in a good situation now?
Well, yeah. Frankly, the whole thing was a bit of a downer for me, so a few months later, I found another job myself.
You wanted that turnover idea. Nate, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. As we just have a minute or so left with you, Mitchell Lee Marks, but I wanted to ask you, one thing that we never consider is that managers, especially middle managers, well, you know, they've probably never had to do this before. They're new at it.
Absolutely. And a few companies I've worked with, we've done training for managers before the cuts. We've had role plays on delivering the news. And Neil, the reality is when you have to sit down with someone and deliver such bad news, most people are in shock. They don't really respond a lot. And of course, the managers before the training are worried, oh my God, they're going to freak out, they're going to cry, they're going to get violent, they're going to do this. That very rarely happens. Again, this is an indication that most organizations want to do the cuts quickly. They don't want to take time to train people. They don't want to take time to work with the survivors, get it over with, put it behind us. As your caller just said, he's been doing this for, 14 years or 14 rounds of downsizing? Mm-hmm. It's ingrained in him. He hasn't let go of this. And he took control. He walked out the door. That's what a lot of the good people do. But the point is that When I do this training, when I do the workshops, one of the things I convey to people is cut each other some slack. Your immediate boss, your senior people. The problem is that, as you say, it is very difficult. No one's been down this path to the extent that we have been with this economy. And the fact is, if when people are settled down and talk to in an adult way, they listen, they hear, and they respond in an adult way.
Mitchell Lee Marks, thanks so much for your time.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
Mitchell Lee Marks' book is Charging Back Up the Hill, Workplace Recovery After Mergers, Acquisitions, and Downsizing. With us today from KQED, our member station in San Francisco. Coming up, your letters and, well, claims that Al-Qaeda's on the run. This is NPR News.